We're starting today, our daf is Kuf Dalet. I'm going to start toward the end of Kuf Gimel Amud Bet. It was a very interesting story over Shabbat about the death of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi and all sorts of interesting aspects of it. You know, firstly about his wife, and that's why it was brought up here, about how to take care of the almanah. There were all sorts of things that talked about death. And, you know, simanim, like good to die at a certain time and not another time, which was considered even there a little superstitious, possibly. Anyway, toward the end of the daf, the interesting part I just wanted to mention, I was talking to Don and Shul about it, when he goes to who succeeds him, it's very fascinating because there's a whole discussion, why didn't Rabbi Chia take over for Rebbe? And then there's all these different debate about whether Rabbi Chia was actually alive at Rebbe's death or not, and sources that seem to indicate so, they try to say, well, maybe it was flipped, but then in the end they say, well, even if we say it wasn't flipped, he had a different reason, and that's because Rabbi Chia was very busy taking care of individuals, you know, doing mitzvot, and he felt like if he took over the leadership, that would prevent him from doing all these good ma'asim. And I thought that was an interesting message about, you know, that different people have different strengths, and if he was good at treating individuals, then once you put him in a leadership position, that would prevent him from being able to do that, and therefore he didn't want to burden him with it. Anyway, I thought that was very interesting and worthy of note. Okay, let's start from toward the end, Tanya. Okay, two lines from the bottom. Rebbe Mutal B'Tzipori, U'makom Muchan Lo B'Beit Sha'arim. Have you ever been to Beit Sha'arim? Right, it's really great, and that's where they say Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was buried, even though his body was in, like he died in Tzipori, or he was sick in Tzipori, but they buried him in Beit Sha'arim. And then they say, Bahatanya Tzedek Tzedek Trudov, Halach Achar Rebbe L'Beit Sha'arim. So then they say, wait, but how could he have been in Tzipori? Doesn't it say, go to Rebbe in Beit Sha'arim? If you want to find Tzedek, you know, go and have him judge you in Beit Sharim. So they say, Rebbe b'Beit Sharim hava, ela kevan dechalash, am tiyu ili tzipori demidlia ubasim avira. Okay, bring him to Tzipori because the air is better there and it would be better for him when he was already getting old. Hahu yoma denach nafshe de Rebbe. Now we get to a really interesting story. Okay, if it wasn't interesting enough until now, it's going to continue to be very interesting about Rebbe's death. The day that Rebbe died, okay, now apparently he wasn't yet dead. Gazru Rabbanan Ta'anita, Ubau Rachame. They declared a fast day and everyone should pray for Rachamim. Now some of them talk about the fact that all the days of Rebbe there was never a problem with rain, one of the sources say from Ta'anit. So they say it could be people didn't want him to die because he brought good fortune to them. Things were good while he was alive, so they really didn't want him to die, besides the fact that he was Rebbe and they didn't want him to die. So they were praying for his recovery. Va'amru, and here it gets really extreme, they said, Kol man da'amar nach nafshe de Rebbe yidaker b'cherev. Anyone who says that Rebbe is dead will be stabbed, you know, will be killed with a sword. Okay, I don't know why specifically killed with a sword. But anyway, what was the issue here? It seems that they didn't want people to stop praying for him. So they didn't want anyone to proclaim that he was dead because then people would stop praying. And I guess, you know, sometimes it's unclear exactly at what point someone's dead. So, you know, they didn't want anyone to kind of do it a little earlier before he actually died. And therefore they wanted to basically prolong his life. Silka Amte de Rebbe Leigra. Do you remember the Amma of Rebbe? She's the woman who taught us all these words. We didn't know the etymology of the words, and the Amma of Rebbe told us the etymology of the words. She was obviously this intelligent woman. So she goes up to the roof. Amra Elyonim Mevakshim et Rebbe, Vatachtonim Mevakshim et Rebbe. So she goes up to the roof and she says, the people on high, you know, God and up there, want Rebbe, and the Tachtonim down below, right, want Rebbe. I don't know why exactly she went to the Aliyah, but maybe it was like this concept of she's like in between, right? She's not with the people down below. She's not with the people up above. She kind of went to this higher spot to be in between them and to be able to kind of get some perspective maybe. And also, you know, she's going to give this tefillah now. Yihi ratzon shi'chofu tachtonim et ha'elyonim. Okay? Now, the other reason it could be she went upstairs is it could be that's where Rebbe was. Okay? And that might be clear from this part of the story. כיוון דחזאי כמה זימני דעיה לבית הכיסא, בחלץ תפילין ומנח להו וכמצטער, because she saw how many times he obviously had this disease, holy me'ayim, of his stomach, of his innards, and it was causing him to go to the bathroom all the time, and he was wearing his tefillin, right? You imagine someone on their deathbed wearing tefillin. Every time he has to go to the bathroom, he took off his tefillin, went to the bathroom, put them back on. Hard to imagine the situation. And she saw that it was painful for him, right? Some of us have been in this situation, seeing someone who's on their deathbed, and you don't know, is it better to keep them alive or better that they already die? So what does she do? Amra, she switches her tefillah. Yihi ratzan shichofu al yonim et hatachtonim. Okay? So she basically says, I think it's better at this point that the Elyonim take him and the Tachtonim lose out and basically Rebbe die because it's so painful for him to watch him live. Velo havu shatke rabbanim milabai rachme. But the rabbis wouldn't stop praying for rachamim. Okay? They kept praying for him. It's unclear, by the way, whether they heard her or not. Like maybe she was on the roof and she was screaming to them, you know? Maybe she was screaming out loud so everyone would hear her. But they didn't really listen to her. So what does she do? Shakla kuza, shadya me'igra la'ara. She takes a kli cheres and she throws it from the roof down to the ground. What happens, obviously? It smashes. Everybody is quiet for a minute because they're like in shock from that big smash. They stop praying for a second. Ishtiku mirachame. So they stop praying for a minute. V'nach nafshe de Rebbe. And Rebbe dies. Okay? This is obviously a very interesting source to be used for, you know, this issue that many, many people struggle with, which is, you know, do you keep people alive? Do you keep them alive on machines? Do you not? What do you do? I mean, the source seems to indicate that really the rabbis didn't think that he should die. On the other hand, it brings up on the flip side that, you know, maybe they were wrong, maybe not. Maybe the Amah was wrong. It's unclear from here where you go with it, but you know, I think it's the stronger point made is really that the rabbis didn't think that they should do that. On the other hand, they weren't bashetach, right? She was the one bashetach watching him. They weren't watching him every time he had to go to the bathroom, take off his tefillin, how difficult it was
selfish
for him.
They want him not to die, not to release him from his suffering, but so that they and everybody else would be protected.
Right.
It's
so,
a good thing, but
so,
they're not thinking about him.
Right. So first of all, it's unclear. The Mefarshim talk about that. It clearly doesn't say that in the text. But yeah, the way that Mefarshim understand, those who connect it with the fact that they were getting good life because of Rebbe and they were getting rain and everything, clearly go with the selfish attitude that they were really focusing on themselves. On the other hand, it could be that they were really focusing on Rebbe, but also were they thinking about what's best for Rebbe or not? On the other hand, anyone who's been in that situation knows that it's very complicated to know what's best for the person and, you know,
and
what's good for them.
Strong point here is how directly prayer can influence
action. Yes, yes. Well, that's the other thing. Yes, yes. There's another, okay, so going in that line, thank you for bringing that up, is the power of prayer. There's Dafka's source that talks about it. It's one of the main sources used in this discussion and, you know, these ethical, halakhic discussions about these things. It's about this woman who was very old and wanted to die already. And the rabbi asks, so what do you do every day that's, you know, keeping, like, he wants to know what's keeping her alive, basically. And she says, I go to shul every day. And which is an interesting source, bichlal, that a woman's going to shul. And he basically says, don't go to shul. And as far as I remember, it's like that she went to minyan or something. And don't go to minyan, and then she dies. Like, that was keeping her alive. Not even the davening itself, but the, you know, I mean, obviously she was davening, but the fact she was davening with tzibur was a schut for her. So yeah, definitely.
By David HaMelech,
right? David HaMelech also. This is a very similar story to the one we saw with David HaMelech, where also, you know, I forget
the
what happened.
He's davening all the time, and then
something distracts him.
Wind.
It was a wind. He tripped on a step, or there was something.
Exactly,
right. And also, he gets distracted, and then
for a second,
right, and right. Right, the same genre of stories. Okay, by the way, I didn't get to look it up, but there's a version in the Rishalmi that Donna pointed out to me, and I saw it also mentioned in a bunch of places. I just didn't have a chance to look at it. But apparently the story is very different there. And it's one thing to always remember when you have historical stories. Like, this is clearly a historical event of Rebbe's death. However, you have to remember that when the rabbis tell the story, they're not telling it necessarily from a factual historical perspective. They're telling it from a perspective of what issues they want to stress. So that's why the version in the Yerushalmi is totally different from the version in the Bavli, because each one wants to stress, you know, a certain point. So the stress here, let's say, on this issue, you know, would be about the power of prayer, possibly, you know, the other issue about the leadership and what kind of leadership is necessary, you know, and particularly it's interesting in the Bavli, because the Bavli always has these issues of leadership and succession. And when we learned the story, for example, of Rabban Gamliel and Rabbi Yehoshua way back in Brachot in the beginning, also we discussed the agenda of the Bavli is to relate to this. There was a lot of competition among the rabbis and the arrogance, and a lot of the focus of the story was to point out those issues and deal with issues that were specifically weren't necessarily what was going on in the time of the Tanaim, whether the story is about that, but who's telling the story, and that's the Amoraim are telling the story, and they're telling it with their version of what they see the issues of their day. So also this could be, you know, connected to that. You'd have to see the Yerushalmi version and compare and see. Okay. That's just methodologically what you do when you have these stories, if we have more time to go into it. Amar le Rabbana le Bar Kapara, Zil Ayen. So now they say to Bar Kapara, go see. Go see if he's really dead. Azal Eshkache Denach Nafshe. He saw that he was dead, but remember what happened. They said, anyone who said Rebbe's dead, you know, will have to be killed by the sword. So now, even though it could be it's not really relevant anymore, because they were trying to say before he had actually died, but he still doesn't want to come out and tell everyone that he's dead, because there's still that line they said, and he doesn't want to have something terrible happen to him. So what does he do? Kare lelevushe, he tears kriya, because his rabbi died, v'ahadre lekare la'achore, but he puts it behind him so that they won't notice it right away, and it won't be as if he told them that he was dead. Because it's not even saying with words, he felt like it was even announcing it by, you know, having kriya on his shirt. Patach va'amar, he says, so now he says, b'lashon remez, elim u'mitzukim achazu ba'aron ha'kodesh, nitzchu elim et ha'mitzukim. Okay, he says, the angels and the, what are the mitzukim, the, what do they say? The tzadikim, right, the tzadikim that are mitzuke eretz, they're like on the cliffs. So the malachim and the tzadikim were each trying to grab the Aron Kodesh, right? It sounds very similar to what she was saying, the Elyonim and the Tachtonim. Nitzchu arelim et ha-mitzukim, right? The malachim won out. Minashva Aron HaKodesh, and the Aron HaKodesh blew. Amrulei nach nafshe, so they said he must be dead. Amar lehu, he says to them, Atun kamaritu, you said it. Va'ani ana lo kamina, I didn't say it. Okay, he's trying to make sure nothing happens to him. Okay, now another aspect. We keep having little clip snippets about Rebbe's death. Bishat p'tirato shel Rebbe, when he was on his deathbed, zakaf eser etzba'otav klapei mala. He puts his 10 fingers, raises them up toward Shemayim. Amar, he says, Ribono shel olam, galui v'yadua lefanecha sheyagati be'eser etzba'otai b'torah ve'lo nehaneti afilu be'etzba ktana. You know that I worked all my life with my 10 fingers toward Torah, you know, in the Torah I worked with, but I never got any sort of hana, even from etzba ktana. We've seen this etzba ktana before, right? Like, kolam istakel be'etzba ktana shel isha, right? If you look at a woman's small finger, even like the smallest thing, and it's like in a way of attraction, right? And she's not your wife, like that's a problem. So here we also see even etzba ktana, it's like a thing they use those days to say even something small, I didn't ever benefit from anything in your world. Yehi ratzam lefanecha sheyehe shalom b'menuchati. I want to go in peace. Yatzta bat kol v'amra yavo shalom yanuchu al mishkavotam. Okay, peace will come to you. Okay, now we're going to see this word is a little problematic. Right? They will be rested on their beds. So now, how does it, the pasuk, the Gemara is going to ask immediately, why does it say in the beginning of the pasuk, there's a pasuk from Yeshayahu, why does it say yavo shalom in singular, and then yanuchu al mishkavotam in plural? So it says al mishkavcha mibayle. It should have said al mishkavcha, it really should have said yanuach, right? You will rest on your bed. So who's this yanuchu? So they say, Misayele Rabbi Chiya Bar Gamda. This supports the what we see from Rabbi Chiya Bar Gamda. Da Amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Gamda, Amar Rabbi Yossi Ben Shaul. Bisha'ash HaTzadik Niftar Min HaOlam, Omrim Malachei HaSharet Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ribono Shel Olam, Tzadik Ploni Ba. Okay, they say this is the scene that goes on in Shemayim when the Tzadik dies. What happens? The Malachim say before God. I'm sorry. God says before. Right. The Malachim say before God, Tzadik Ploni Ba. Okay. There's a Tzadik coming. Omer Lahem. God says to them, Yavo'u Tzadikim V'yetzu Likrato. The Tzadikim, when he dies and goes up to Shamayim, all the other Tzadikim in Shamayim should go and greet him. The Omrim Lo, now we get to the Pasuk, Yavo B'Shalom. They come and greet him, and they say to him, Yavo B'Shalom. Okay? Like in Rebbe's story, this Bat Kol came down. So they're saying, just like the Bat Kol comes down in Shamayim, the Tzadikim kind of go to him and say, Yavo B'Shalom. Yanuchu Al Mishkevotam. And then what happens? Then all the Tzadikim go back, Lanuach Al Mishkevotam. In other words, they come out to greet him, and then they go back to their beds and rest. Amar Rabbi Elazar. Okay, here's another statement that's similar. Although I have to admit, I don't 100% understand how to read the last line. I only have a suggestion of how to read it. When the tzaddik niftar min ha'olam, shalosh kitot shamalachei asherot yotzot likrato. Here's another drasha, which basically says it's not just the malachim come out and the tzaddikim come out, but there's three different groups, and they're going to split this pasuk up. Okay, the whole pasuk reads, if you have the Torah or on the side, most of you have it on the side in the Schottenstein, it says, Yavo Shalom, Yanuchu Amish Kevotam, Holech Nochicho. Okay, they go out toward him, opposite him. So now, we're going to see here how they darshan this pasuk, and they're going to a little bit switch the order. Okay, they're going to read, if you see there's three parts, Yavo Shalom, Yanuchu Amish Kevotam, Holech Nochicho. So they're going to put Holech Nochicho in the middle. Okay, and they're going to explain it in a particular way. So, how does it work? That's the first, okay? Yavo Shalom means Bo B'Shalom, come in peace. This, by the way, there was a Gemara in Brachot. There was, what do you say when someone dies and someone's alive? Lech L'Shalom, Lech B'Shalom. So Dafka B'Shalom was the dead person. So here you see the same thing. They say Bo B'Shalom, even though the Pasuk just says Yavo Shalom. V'achat Omeret Holech Nochecho. Okay, you should walk in a straight way, okay? Meaning like you're probably straight like righteousness. Walk in righteousness and tzedek. Ve'achad omeret lo, yavo shalom yanuchu amish kevotam. Okay, this last line, I don't know how they want to read it exactly. The next line kind of connects those two passages, and maybe they're actually saying it in the same way we just learned it a minute ago, which is, they greet him and then they go back to their beds. Otherwise, I don't really understand how they want to read it. All the commentaries I read didn't really relate to this at all.
Why don't they say shalom and neshama? Yanuchu al mishkavotam. In other words, if it turns into plural, then it's the neshama plus the shalom.
Why the neshama and the shalom? What do you mean?
Because it says, the shalom, peace. You're finally at peace.
So uh-huh.
Peace greets you and peace accompanies you and you become together one with peace. And then
mm-hmm. Like your neshama and with peace go to their beds.
In other words, using shalom as a...
So the peace isn't yours, like the neshama is yours and the... Right, you're saying...
You
right, I don't know if peace rests, really. Yeah, I don't know. Tough to know how to follow this exactly, what the meaning is. Right. I'm sure there's different Parshan or Yod on the Pasuk also. I mean, I looked up a few. I didn't see anything so... You know, right. Okay. B'sha'asha, now, in comparison... This source continues, Rabbi Elazar continues, B'sha'asha ha-rasha ne'eva min ha'olam. Now what happens to a rasha on the flip? Shalosh kitot shamalachei chabala yotzot likrato, okay? Malachim of attack, you know. Achad omeret ein shalom, okay, the opposite. Instead of bo b'shalom, there is no peace. Amar Hashem l'rishayim, right? The rishayim will never lie in peace. Ve'achad omeret l'ma'atseva yishkav, okay, you will lie in sorrow. You'll be unhappy. V'achad omeret, rida v'hashkeva et arelim. Okay, you should go down and, I don't know, how would you translate this? V'hi shachva et arelim. Go down and sleep among the arelim, as opposed to the tzaddik who's going to now sleep with the tzaddikim. So this guy's going to go with the arelim. Okay. New Mishnah. Okay. And here I made charts, and we're back to regular, away from the stories, back to the regular text of stuff. Kol zman shehi bebeit avia, govek tubata la'olam. Kol zman shehi bebeit ba'ala, govek tubata ad 25 shanim. Sheyesh ve'25 shanim, shetase tova keneged tubata, devrei Rabbi Meir, shamar mishum rashbak. Here we have a big question, which is, we've been talking until now that what does a woman do? She gets mezonot, right? When does she demand her ketubah? Either when she's going to go get remarried, or, you know, at a certain point, she just says, okay, now I want my ketubah money, but then she's not going to get mezonot anymore. So now we want to know, is there a time frame where she can no longer demand her ketubah? Is there an end to that? Is there an end, you know, where she can't say anymore, oh, by the way, you still owe me all this money, right, to the estate, right, to the yorshim. So, or, you know, maybe here we're talking about dafka and almana. So now, what are they saying? Rabbi Meir, in the name of Rav Rashbag, basically distinguishes between where is she living. If she's living, we're going to see that both distinguish, we're going to see a machlok, a chachamim Rabbi Meir, but they're going to be flipped, okay? I forgot to fill something in the chart. Anyway, we're going to see that they're flipped, and as opposed to, right, usually we have they agree on one and they disagree on another. Here we're going to see that they're they say the exact opposite because they each have a different logic. So, what does Rabbi Meir say? Kol zman shi bebeit avia. As long as she's in her father's house, she can always demand her ketubah money. But if she stays in her husband's house, okay, what's going to happen? She can only get it for 25 years. What's his logic? Because what's the assumption? In the course of 25 years, what happens? A woman generally, your neighbor comes and asks for eggs. Your neighbor comes and asks for flour. Your neighbor comes and asks for this. Over time, if you're living in the house, neighbors are going to come asking for things. You're going to give out, right? And over a course of 25 years, it's going to add up to basically the amount of your ketubah. Okay? All those little bits that you let your neighbors or, you know, use property of the house for doing a tova to somebody. Okay, that's what he means. She's going to do favors for people and use up stuff in the house. It's worth of 25 years of ketubah money. Okay, we're going to get to some questions on this later on. The Chachamim Omrim, they basically don't buy into this. You know, they're not worried about that. Chachamim Omrim, it's dafka the opposite. Kol zman shehi bebeit ba'ala, gova ketubata la'olam. Kol zman shehi bebeit avia, gova ketubata ad 25 shanim. Okay? So, I just didn't do this right in the chart. I put the whole line under the whatever. It just flips. But what do we have here? According to Chachamim, if she's in Beit Aviya, then she has 25 years. If she's in Beit Ba'ala, then she can always demand her ketubah forever. What's the logic of Chachamim? Okay, the logic of Chachamim is like this. The assumption is that if she's being supported in his house, so let's go back. Why is the assumption that after a certain amount of time, according to Chachamim, your ketubah runs out? Not because you've used up the money. No, that's not the concern. The concern is that since you haven't demanded it all this time, it must be you don't ever plan to demand it. And you're mochel on it. That's the assumption. That there's an aspect of mechila. Right? It's like if you lose something and, you know, time. Let's say you find something. And nobody's claimed it after, you know, a certain period of time. The assumption is it's yours. No one's coming to claim it. There's yeush sort of, right? It's almost like that. At a certain point, she's obviously mochalan. If she hasn't asked for her money, she must not care about it. Okay? That's the assumption. It's like if someone's living in a house and nobody claims the house, right? You have chazkas shalosh shanim. You've been living in the property for 3 years. The assumption is if nobody's claimed, that's my property, get off. After 3 years, then that property is yours. Obviously, they don't care anymore about it. So that's the assumption here. Here, obviously, it's not going to be 3 years because she can get mezonot and all that. But the point is, if you've stretched it that far, 25 years, you have to wonder, by the way, how many situations actually went 25 years where, you know, one spouse was dead and the other was still alive and going for 25 years. In those days, the lifespan wasn't as long. Hard to imagine. What?
And
hadn't demanded their ketubah, right, and hadn't remarried. So it was probably a most unlikely situation. But anyway, they claim that... So now, how does this connect to Beit Aviya Beit Ba'ala? Since she was... Now, you have to think about why didn't she demand the ketubah? So if she's living in Beit Ba'ala, you could say that she didn't demand it because she was embarrassed. Like, here they're doing such good things for her. They're giving her food all the time. She's embarrassed to go ask them for a big lump sum of money. But whereas if she's living in her father's house, where she doesn't see them all the time, they're not doing good things for her necessarily. They're still, you know, she gets her mezonot from them, but they're not, she's not in daily contact and doing, you know, that they're nice to her, etc. So therefore, the assumption is that if she didn't claim it, it wasn't because she was, like, being nice to them and was embarrassed to go take it from them. And therefore, her, it is considered that she was mochel if she's in Beit Aviya, but if she's in Beit Bala, it's not considered mechila. We can assume she's doing it for a different reason. Meita Yorsha, Chachamim continue and say, Meita, if she dies, then how long do the Yorshim have to demand the ketubah? So there he says, no matter what, Yorsha maskirim ketubah ad 25 shanim, and they don't get any more than 25 years. Okay, now we're going to have a diyun. First, we're going to start about Rabbi Meir's opinion. Then we're going to get into Chachamim's opinion. Amar le'abai le'Rabbi Yosef, Aniyasha b'Yisrael ad 25 shanim, umarta b'baitur ad 25 shanim. First of all, I think it's interesting here. They don't just say aniya and ashira, but when they talk about ashira, they pick a person, and they say, like Marta Babaitus, that everyone knew she was a very wealthy woman. We've seen her before, by the way, if you remember. And she was obviously this very wealthy woman. And they're basically saying, what do you mean? A woman like Marta Babaitus clearly had a very large ketubah. So how could her ketubah be up in 25 years, you know, in terms of, like, she gave to her friends, you know, if you're talking about financially, right? So if she gives to her friends little bits and pieces, it's not going to add up to her huge ketubah, right? It's not going to be the same as an aniyah. Like, there should be a difference in time between them. So here they have a good answer. Amarle lefum gam l'shichna. Every gamal takes a load as heavy as it can handle, right? Like a different gamalim or different sizes. So they say a woman like Marta Babaitus clearly gave away more things than a poor person, right? If a poor person, you come to borrow something, you know, or you come to take eggs, right? You're not going to take a lot. You're going to take a little. But if you go to Marta Babaitus, you wouldn't mind to take a dozen eggs from her at one shot. So basically, they say it's going to add up, okay? In 25 years, the tovot that a rich woman does are going to add up to her ketubah, and the tovot of a small woman are going to add up to her ketubah. Now they have another good question. Ibai lehula Rabbi Meir, ma'u shetishalesh. What if, in other words, yes, it's true that if this whole thing has to do with a woman giving away money, and after 25 years she's going to give away a lot of money, right, and enough to reach her ketubah. So what happens, let's say, after 24 years? She's already given away 24/5 of her ketubah, according to this calculation. So does she only get 1/25 of her ketubah? Okay, right? That's the obvious question about this shita. This shita basically, right, the second shita of Chachamim is very much the 25 years makes sense. It's saying, at that point, you know, she wasn't mochel. If she's mochel a day before, okay, we'll get into that also. What if it's just a day before? But the assumption is if at some point within 25 years, you know, that was the number they came up with, she wasn't mochel, so we can assume she's not, you know, she doesn't care anymore. But here it has to do with how much money she took. So what about all those tovot she did? She's going to get her full ketubah now, 24 years after she, you know, after she should have gotten it. So what are the answer? Teku. We don't know the answer to that question. As it's tough to know, do Rabbi Meir mean only after 25 years do we say all this adds up and we ignore it until that point? Or is it proportional? The Chachamim Amrim Kolzman. Okay, so now we're going into Shita Chachamim. Amar le'abai le'Rabbi Yosef. Okay, notice Abai said to Rabbi Yosef also the question on Rabbi Meir. So now he says the same thing. You know, he's also asking a question to Rabbi Yosef, but a different question. According to Chachamim, Atai kodem shkiyat hakama govak tubata la'achar shkiyat hakama lo gavya. So I don't understand. You get to year 25, and before shkia of year 25, right, the year going into 25, right? So if she does it before shkia, that's okay. But if she does it after shkia, we're going to say too late. Like, I understand. What's the difference between those few minutes, right? That makes all the difference. So here's the obvious answer, and we've seen this before. Amar le'in, yes, it's true. Oh, sorry. Bahi porta achilte, on that little bit that, you know, she was mochel from before, like that moment before. Amar le'in, yes, it's true. Why? Because kol midah chachamim kenhi. When chachamim give a measurement, you have to stick with that measurement, because otherwise, right, you have to draw the line somewhere. You can't just not have a line drawn. So what do they say? Barba'im se'ah tovel, barba'im se'ah chaser kortuv eino yacholet bo bahem. We've seen this before, by the way. Right? If you have 40 se'ah in a mikvah, you can tovel in them. But if it's missing a little teeny bit from the 40 se'ah, it's no good. Like, that's just the way it is, right? It's like, if you miss mantfilah by a minute, you know, you missed it by a minute. That's the attitude. Obviously not bo'olam ha-chassidut, right? But they have a different attitude. But this is the attitude. They had to draw a line somewhere. Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav. Okay, now we're going to have a machloket. Okay, if you follow on the sheet, I basically did a sheet mostly toward close to the end here, about all the different things that are going on. So now we're going to have a machloket within Shitat Chachamim. So remember, Chachamim said if she's in the husband's house, she can always demand it because of the tovah he does to her, you know, and she's embarrassed to ask for the ketubah money. And if she's in her, not he, but the yorshim, and if she's in the father's house, then we assume if she doesn't ask for 25 years that she was moch. So now they're going to say, Amar Yehuda Amarav, he'id Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yossi lefnei Rabbi, Shamar Mishum Aviv. Okay, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi said in the name of Rabbi Yossi. We saw him on the page before in yesterday's daf about the relationship between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi. The Rabbi revered him very much. So, Lo Shanu Ela She'ein Shtar Ketubah Yotzei Mitachat Yada. Ah, this is only in the case where she doesn't have a shtar. She doesn't have a ketubah anymore. Okay, and then at a certain point we say she was mochel on it. Aval Shtar Ketubah Yotzei Mitachat Yada. Govak to batala olam. But if she still has her shtar ketubah in her hand, she can still be gove. What's the logic here? The logic is if she was mochel, she would have handed over the shtar to the yorshim and said, I don't want to take this anymore. Now that assumes, right, that there's an act of mechila, that at a certain point she was mochel, right? The way I assume you understood it, the way I understood it was, over time just goes by, and eventually she just says, oh, you know, I don't need this money. Clearly, I've been managing without it. I don't need it. But his assumption is, no, like there was a moment there within the 25 years where she actually said, I don't want this anymore, and she handed over the shtar to them. So now she can't produce a shtar. We say she must have handed over the shtar to them or ripped it up or something. And that's proof that she was mochelet. But if there's no such proof of that and she's got the shtar in her hand, she must have saved the shtar to eventually be gover ketubata. Whether she was in her father's house, whether she wasn't, it doesn't matter. Okay? She must have been not mevater on this ketubah, and therefore she can still demand it. That's Rav's shita, passed down by Rav Yehuda. But Rabbi Elazar says, afilu shtar ketubah yotzei mitachat yadeha, even if she still has a shtar ketubah, because he understands it the way I did, which is that basically it's not that she had a moment where she said, I don't want this anymore, and she rips up the shtar. It's just that as time goes on, she clearly doesn't care about it anymore, and she clearly, you know, was mochelet. Okay, even if the shtar is still in her hand. Okay, now we're going to basically focus on Shitat Rav. Okay, so I'm Mativ Rav Shesha. Rav Shesha asked the question on Rav. Says in a braita, Baal Chov goveh shelo bahazkara. A Baal Chov can demand their you know, something owed to them without how did they translate hazkara there? Right, with even if he was silent about it for a long time. Okay, in other words, even if he doesn't mention it at all and he doesn't talk about it, and then all of a sudden he shows up after 25 years and says, by the way, remember you owe me money, right? He can still get his money. Now, what's the assumption here? That it's only, okay, we'll get to there in a minute, but it's only a Baal Chov, but not an Almana. Okay? Because, right, we said she's in a different category from a Baal Chov. Only Baal Chov can still get it, Shelo Bahazkara. So now they want to know, and this is going to be their question on Rav, what's the case when we say he's Govesh Shelo Bahazkara? Hechidami. Idilo Nakit Shtara. If he doesn't have a star in his hand, B'mai gave, with what can he possibly demand his chov, right? He just goes after 25 years and says, you remember you owe me money? What do you mean? Of course he can't do that. He needs a shtar. Ela dinakit shtara. It must be he's got a shtar in his hand, in which case, right, what is the Braita teaching us? Bal chov hu de la barachule. He can't be considered mochel la barachulehu, but ha almana achiltehu, even with a shtar. And that goes against Rav. Okay, because Rav said, once she has a shtar, we can assume she's never mochel. And here they're saying, no, because a Baal Chov, if he has a shtar, can never be mochel. However, in Almana, we can assume she was mochelet. So what do you have from this source? This source teaches you that a Baal Chov is never mochel, right? In which case, if he has a shtar, right? If he doesn't have a shtar, obviously he can't be goveh his chov. So now they say, no, you don't necessarily have to read the source this way, in which case it doesn't have a question on Rav. In the end, they're going to say it's a case where he doesn't have a shtar. And that's what they're going to say here.
Yeah. I don't want, but aren't the Yorshim, let's say she dies and then the Yorshim, they are like a Baal Chov, aren't they?
I don't think they have the same status as a Baal Chov. I think they're still in a different category. That's my sense. I think anything that comes, you know, if she's in a different category, then I assume the Yorshim are in a different category. What do you want to say,
Her Yorshim?
Yeah, her Yorshim.
Her Yorshim. I thought
They turn into a Baal Chav. I think they're treated like a Baal Chav in certain ways, but they're not 100% as a Baal Chav.
They don't become, but they have certain status.
They're like a Baal Chav, but they're not the exact same thing.
There's different types of properties that they can collect against.
Right.
Maybe that's why they do.
Maybe. So here they're clearly distinguishing. Now, whether you have to assume, just because it says Baal Chav, that it excludes the Almana, I also don't know that that's so clear cut here. But that's the way Rav Sheshet's taking it, that it excludes the Almana. So now they say, Ela dinakit shtara. So now, who motive lava, who mefarik lava? This is a very famous line. They always say this. He asks the question, Rav Sheshet, and he answers up his own question. Okay? He answers it. Le'olam de'lo nakit shtar. It's talking about that he didn't have a shtar. V'hacha b'mayis kinan. How could he possibly demand this chovah for 25 years if he doesn't have a shtar? Kishachayav modeh. When the guy who owes him the money admits that, you're right, I owe you the money. Okay? And that's the case. In which case, this has nothing to do with a shtar, and therefore it doesn't provide a question. It's not a question. So now they're going to ask another question, and they're going to answer the same answer. V'ha'amar Rabbi Ilah, Shonim, he brought a braita, also that says, Grusha harehi kebal chov. A grusha has the status of a bal chov. What does that seem to imply? A grusha and not an almana. So again, heichidami, in what case does the grusha have a status like a bal chov? Idelo nakik tu ba b'may gavya, right? Obviously they mean in the sense that the bal chov is never mochel, right? So they say, if she doesn't have a shtar, so what's she collecting? Right, remember, if you have a get, you have to show your ketubah. Why? Because otherwise we assume you might have already collected your ketubah. Yeah, that whole Mishnah about that. Elalav dinikita ketubah, ugrushahi delav batachulehi ha'almana achilta. Right, so it must be that she has her ketubah in her hand, and it's just a grusha and not an almana, which means if almana doesn't have her shtar or ketubah, then she can't demand it. So how could Rav say that she could? So again, what do they answer? Achanami kashchayev mode. It's only when she's a grusha who goes to demand her ketubah, and the husband says, you're right, I never gave you your money. But she's coming without her physical ketubah in her hand. Okay. Now, we're going to get into... we're going to bring a chizuk for Rav from a braita. Okay? First, we brought two questions on him and answered them up. Now, we're going to bring a chizuk. Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Tane Rav Yehuda Bar Kaza b'matnita, Debe Bar Kaza. He learned it from a Mishnah from the house of Bar Kaza. If she demands her ketubah at any point, then we start counting 25 years from the time she went to court to get her ketubah. And if she still has the shtar in hand, what are we going to say? Like Rav? Okay, she can always demand her ketubah. So that's a support of Rav Shita of Chachamim, that she can still demand her ketubah so long as she has the ketubah in hand. Okay, in which case the whole machloket in the Mishnah, or Chachamim Shita in the Mishnah that we distinguish between Beit Aviyah and Beit Baalah, is all in the case where she doesn't have a shtar in her hand. Shalach le Rav Nachman bar Rav Chisda le Rav Nachman bar Yaakov. Okay, here's a question we're going to have. Basically, the way I defined it here in the sheet is, it's a question about the machloket Rav and Rabbi Elazar about how to understand Shita Chachamim and Rabbi Meir. So Yilamdenu Rabbeinu, Kishashtar Ktuba Yotze Mitachat Yada Machloket, is the machloket between Rabbi Meir and Chachamim when there's a ketuba, or are they arguing about a case where she doesn't have a shtar ketuba? V'halacha kedivrei mi, and who do we hold like? So shalach le, b'she'ein shtar ketubah yotzei mitachat yadeha, machloket. When there's no shtar, then there's a machloket Rabbi Meir and Chachamim, which is basically shitat Rav, right? Because shitat Rav says that they're arguing only when there's no shtar, but if she has a shtar, then she can always demand it forever. Aval shtar ketubah yotzei mitachat yadeha, govak ketubata le'olam. V'halacha kedivrei Chachamim. Okay, so we hold like Rav in understanding what case is the machloket, and we paskin like Chachamim that she can be go back to batala olam if she has a shtar, but if she doesn't have a shtar, it depends. If it's Beit Aviha, then she can't demand it only to 25 years, and if it's Beit Ba'ala, if she's living in Beit Ba'ala, then she can demand it forever. Ki ata Rav Dimi, Amar Rav Shimon ben Pasi. Okay, here's going to be another machloket, but Yivrei Chachamim. Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi Mishum Bar Kapara Lo Shanu Ela. Here's a different machloket. They're only talking about mana matayim. We've seen this before that we're constantly asking when we say she doesn't get her ksuba. Do we mean the mana matayim? How do we treat the Tosefet? Right? Is the Tosefet considered like a matana that she gets no matter what, or do we say the Tnai Ktuba Ketuba Dame? And therefore, since the Tosefet is a Tnai Ktuba, then it's treated exactly the same as the Ktuba itself. So the first opinion says we're only talking about mana matayim, val tosefet yesh la. She clearly gets that. Rabbi Avahu, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, afilu tosefet ein la. De Amar Rabbi Aibu, Amar Rabbi Yanai, tnai ktuba kiktuba dame. Okay, and therefore the tnai is exactly the same. Itmar nami. It was also said that Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav lo shanu el mana matayim, aval tosefet yesh la. Okay, here's another. Rabbi Abba said in the name of Rav Huna. Okay, pay attention to the names. It was Rabbi Abba who said it in the name of Rav Huna that she does get the Tosefet, okay, like the first opinion we saw. But now they're telling us that when Rabbi Abba told this halacha in the name of Rav Huna, meaning really when Rav Huna told Rabbi Abba this halacha, because Rabbi Abba passed it down in Rav Huna's name, Rav Huna told it to him, Rabbi Abba asked, Amar le Rabbi Abba le Rav Huna, Amar Rav Hachi, did Rav really say this? Because what did we say? Rabbi Abba says that Rav Huna says it in the name of Rav. So when Rav Huna said that Rav taught this, he wanted to know, this is very interesting, he wanted to know, did Rav really say this? Okay. Amar le Ishtikan ka'amarta? Are you just saying that Rav said it to shut me up? Okay, because you want to say I'm wrong. So you figure, because basically what are we learning from here? That Rabbi Abba held like the other opinion. So he held like Rabbi Yochanan, who said that you're Mavata also on the Tosefet. So he says you're saying it to shut me up because you're trying to say that Rav said it to kind of push me out of the way and say you're totally wrong, even Rav said this. Oh, Eshkeyan Ka'amarta. Or are you trying to say it that you want to support what I'm saying? That like I'm giving you to drink. And you're kind of like, almost like as a, right, how do you understand this exactly? Like, why would he say then that Rav says it? Because he's trying to say, are you, second, he didn't, I'm a Rav Hachi. Oh, sorry. No, I messed it up. When Rabbi Abba says, Rabbi Abba said to Rav Huna, I'm a Rav Hachi, did Rav really say this? So then Rav Huna is saying, are you saying this to basically shut me up? And I'm just saying, what do you think, Rav said this? It can't possibly be that Rav said it. And Rabbi Abba was coming to go against Rav Huna and say, I can't believe you're saying this in the name of Rav. Or are you saying, did Rav really say this, like in a positive way? Oh, because, you know, it's like wine and you want to give me a cup of wine to drink and you're saying, oh, l'chaim, that you said this in the name of Rav. That was it. He was asking about Rabbi Abba's question. Okay, so then Amar Leh, so he says to him, Ishtikan Kamina, I was trying to shut you up. In other words, I disagree and I can't believe that Rav would say such a thing. Okay, so you see here that Rabbi Abba brings in the name of Rav Huna, but really he disagrees with him. Okay, we're going to start this story. I don't think we'll finish it, but we'll get at least a part of the story. Chante Drabchia Aricha, Intat Achvahave. Okay, the mother-in-law of Rabbi Chiya Aricha was also the brother, the wife of his brother. Okay? So it was his mother-in-law, but the mother-in-law married his brother. Okay? The Almana Bebeit Aviahave. And she was an Almana in the house of her father. In other words, his brother died, and she went back to her father's house. Vizana Esrim Bechameshnim Bebein Nasha. Okay, now, Rabbi Chiya Aricha was Mazneota. He gave her Mizonot for 25 years in her father-in-law's house. I'm sorry, in her father's house. Lisof Amrale, okay, what was he doing? He was giving her money from the property of the deceased husband, right? And he would go walk the food there all the time. He would go bring it to her physically. So now, Lisof Amrale, Havli Mizone. At the end, she said, I want Mizonot. Amarla leitlach mizone, you don't get mizonot anymore. So she said, havli ktuba, give me your ktuba. Amarla lo mizone ilach, lo ktuba ilach. Okay, it's 25 years, it's up. Okay, time's up, no more, I'm not giving you food anymore. Tiva'ate ledina, kameh de Rabba Bar Shila, she brings him to court before Rabba Bar Shila. Amarle, he says to her, eima li'izi gufa de uvda hechi hava. Tell me, what was the main idea here, what happened? Amarle, Zanita Esrim v'chamesh shanim b'bein nasha. I've been supporting her for 25 years in the house of her father. B'chaye demar debekatve amtayla. I swear to God, or, you know, on the life of you, I've been carrying them on my tefayim, her food, for 25 years. Amar le, ta'ama mai amur rabbanan, kozman shi bebeit ba'ala, govaktu batala olam. De amrinan, and here we see what I already told you, the Mishnah, the reason why Chachamim say, why do Chachamim say that she gets her tuba forever? Tamrina mishum kisufahu delo tava. It must be because she's embarrassed to go to them after they've been doing so nice to her, supporting her all these years. How could, you know, she was living in their house, how could she go and ask for the money? So hachanami, same thing here. Mishum kisufahu delo tava. Even though she was living in her father's house, you were physically carrying the stuff to her every single year. So basically, you know, every single month. So basically, she had no, you know, she wasn't mochelet, she just didn't have the guts to, she was embarrassed to say, I want all my money. So therefore, zil havla. Okay, so go give her the money. Lo eshkach. He doesn't agree to it. Okay, he ignores the psak. Okay, Tov, I'm going to leave you here. In the middle of the story, tomorrow we'll finish it up. What happens? Okay, so basically, this guy, Rav Chaya Richa, he's not willing to give her the money, even though the psak was he has to give her the money. So tomorrow we'll see what happens.